Hey, good morning, everyone. Alan Ellis here. This is the second hour of the Outdoorsman Radio Show. We are giving a muzzleloader away at the end of this month, and the way to get in on that drawing is to call. Now, I will caution you, however, we have a guest for the first segment. So call when you hear the first set of commercials, and we will take your name and number. And then you've got to go on the air and say, hey, just hi, or tell us a story, or, you know, hey, I just want to get in the contest, whatever it might be, but you do have to go on the air. And we'll put you in the drawing for the muzzleloader at the end of the month. We'll pull somebody's name at random, and you will win a great muzzleloader from our friends at CVA, Connecticut Valley Arms. And you can check out all the we're giving away a wolf. You can check that out on their website. Go to my website, ellisoutdoors.com. And click on the link to CVA. It'll take you right to that website. You can see all the fine products put out by BPI, Black Powder International, or Black Powder Incorporated. They do the power belt bullets. They do the burger barrels. They do some other good stuff. So you can check that out online. And we always appreciate CVA's support of the Outdoorsman Radio Show. Right now, we have on the phone a commercial fisherman from North Carolina, a fellow by the name of Chris McCafferty, who is testifying at various fishing. Well, I'll let him tell you. Let's do it that way. Hey, Chris, good morning. How you doing?
Good morning. I'm doing great.
Welcome back.
I'm in that muzzleloader.
Yeah, I saw you put your name in there. That's pretty good. Good.
Yeah, might as well.
Sure.
Real quick, what I'm doing is traveling around trying to get support for solutions that would limit the waste in our snapper grouper fishery.
Right.
We're being required to discard thousands of fish that are dying from decompression damage as they come up from deep water,
mm-hmm.
like the diver would get the bends.
Right.
And basically, all they need to do to limit that waste or eliminate it altogether is by splitting our annual quotas into 2 6-month seasons and then manage those quotas with sliding possession limits.
Yeah, well, all right. Whoa. Calm. We're cool. Okay. Let's take this one step at a time and slow down and let our listeners understand what you're trying to say. You've got a commercial fishery for snapper and grouper, North Carolina. Now, North Carolina came under some heat last year with the discard of a lot of striped bass. Photos circulated across the internet, put a bad taste in the mouth of a lot of recreational fishermen. For commercial fishermen in North Carolina who would capture striped bass and then find a bigger school, bigger fish, and discard the fish that they already had on board, kind of a calling type of thing. And it led to
that's not really the way that one happened.
All right, well, tell us in. That was our impression. That's what the media put out. So tell us what happened.
Okay. Well, first off, I don't agree with the directed trawl fishery the way they have that set up. So let me put that out there. But what happened was they just happened to hit a big school of stripers. They were limited to a certain, I believe it was 50 fish that they could keep. So they just had to discard everything beyond those 50 fish. They called Marine Fisheries and asked if they could bring those to the dock and either split them with other permit holders or donate them to the soup kitchen. And they were told that was illegal, they would be fined, and their boat could possibly be seized if they brought those fish in. And so they were forced by law to discard those fish, kind of like I'm being required to do on our snapper grouper fishery. That's where I'd like to see some more common sense included in these. We should not be wasting our resources this way.
Well, we agree with you. Now, understand where you are. You're in Maryland. You're in the midst of a striped bass fishery that's under fire by recreational organizations directed at commercial organizations, the industry. The commercial guys have stepped in it a few times with illegal gill nets, which have been seized. We have a department who is trying to get a handle on striped bass regulations. We've had threats of closing down the gillnet season here based on illegal activity. We've got a shortfall in our commercial fishery of about $2 million. I'm trying to pull these figures out of my head, but I think it's $2.1 million or somewhere in that range, where the commercial fishery is supported by recreational fishing money. The recreational guys are not happy about that. They think that the commercial guys should pay their own way on the striped bass fishery. On the other side of the coin, we've got a crab fishery. Crabs have been over-harvested for years. We've got a recovering crab fishery. We've got people who are dealing with we've got the industry who is dealing with how to regulate themselves and how that process is going to work. So we're very familiar with commercial fisheries. Now, you're bringing in snappers and groupers, but I'm going to ask you to try to help us understand, A, your problem quickly, and then perhaps some insight on or some thoughts on how you feel about our striped bass and crab fishery here. What do you think?
All right. Well, I'll touch on that striped bass and crab fishery real quick. From my understanding, talking to a lot of people here, is that there's a great abundance of striped bass in the bay, and they seem to be eating a lot of the juvenile and even larger crabs. Same thing happens in North Carolina with some of the striped bass in the northern part, and then red drum as well, which are just having a tremendous comeback. And, you know, so I would say that I think the recreational crowd should have higher bag limits and a longer season so that they can, catch some of those fish that are abundant and allow some more crabs to be there for the commercial harvest. And look at, try to get the commercial fishermen maybe to, first off, deal with those people that use the illegal gill nets. I believe, really, if they're going to do it and abuse the resource, they should lose their privilege to be commercial fishermen.
Oh, I'm sure that apparatus is in place, so that's certainly something that could happen. Problem is they haven't caught anybody yet. This has been a year and a half ago. It was February, if I recall, in 2011 when this incident occurred. There were 16 tons of rockfish pulled from the bay in illegal gill nets. So, yeah, I don't know if you recall that or not, but.
No, I didn't know about that. And, I hate it when a commercial fisherman gives us all a bad name. And we can't have a responsible harvest. It's just a matter of we need to deal with those people that are doing it wrong and come up with ways that we can have a sustainable, responsible harvest forever.
Well, I suspect that the community dealt with the wrongdoers in their own inimitable way and left law enforcement out of it. So we haven't seen anything recently other than they did recover a gill net that had been barnacle encrusted that they believe was from that same set over a year and a half ago. And that was publicized here earlier once the shortfall was announced. And they're trying to work out a solution on how to figure out how to get the commercial folks to pay the expenses of managing the fishery. So we'll see what happens. And, of course, groups like CCA have chimed in. And are calling for the commercial guys to ante up, so they're working on that, and I'm sure there will be some legislation come up here in the next General Assembly in January. So, all right, now let's understand your position on the snappers and groupers which are very good food fish, by the way. Well, tell me about the industry. How big is the snapper grouper industry?
Well, it's down to, I believe, there's 600 permits in the South Atlantic now, with about 200 being active and actually working the fishery. And so it's reduced in size. It was overfished, like many of our fisheries, back in the 70s and 80s. These fish have rebounded and are in the process of rebounding.
Right.
They live around structure on the bottom. One of the things that we could do to increase the population is add more structure, artificial reefs.
Now, is this hook and line fishery for you?
Yes, sir, it is.
Okay.
I hand crank almost all of my fish in my boat.
Okay.
We have a great fishery there that is rebounding. We just need to have, and I believe in quotas now. We have quotas on all of these fish now. We just need to manage those quotas so that we extend the seasons through the entire year so that we can keep some of all of the fish that we catch. And you can target fish with a high limit while still keeping some of those that have those lower limits.
Mm-hmm.
After limits have been adjusted.
So what you're saying is when you drop a bait on structure, you're targeting snapper and grouper. But occasionally you'll pull something else up, like what?
Well, I mean, like I mentioned last time I talked to you, you have several different species of snapper and grouper. And
right.
Some of those species will be illegal. And then you have things like triggerfish and
right.
black sea bass and tilefish.
Right.
And so basically the black sea bass will be illegal, I believe, Monday. Pretty much everything else except for grouper is illegal now. So as you target grouper, then you have to use these circle hooks. which they sound good in theory, but when you accidentally catch a fish like a vermilion snapper with a circle hook, you tear his mouth up trying to get that hook out, and so you broke his jaw, and basically that fish will starve to death now after you've discarded him.
Mm-hmm.
And that's where I just really believe that we should be targeting the fish that, like I said, with a high limit, keep the ones with lower limits, count it all against the quotas, and the consumer gets a dependable supply of that seafood through the entire year.
Mm-hmm. And that this is what your testimony has been to the South Atlantic Fisheries Management Council. Here we deal with the Mid-Atlantic Fisheries Management Council that Maryland is a part of. So you've made these suggestions, and what kind of response are you getting?
Well, about 3 years ago when I did it the first time, they told me to take it up to Congress if I didn't like what they were doing. So I started doing that. I have made about 9,000 postcards and had them sent in to different politicians as I traveled around. And so that pressure from the politicians has been applied to the fishery managers, and they are listening now.
Mm-hmm.
And so we set up, they set up Regulatory Amendment 14. And so that is where they can decide how they want to manage some of these important quotas. And that's where I'm trying to just make this final push now to hope that they do set it up right. They set it up wrong. It could actually do more harm than good, or at least shift one problem to another.
Are you getting Are you getting pushback from NOAA and the South Atlantic Fisheries Commission? Are you getting pushback on your suggestions, or are they taking everything under advisement? And you understand the way these things work. I mean, this is like watching a car crash in slow motion. You know,
exactly right.
And the way things work in the in that world. Take an incredible, incredible amount of time. You can have 40 stakeholders sign off on a letter or on an appeal, and 5 years later you might get some kind of a ruling or regulation, and it's just an incredibly slow moving process.
Well, and that I understand that, and that is the case basically. Fishery managers seem to be pretty supportive of these ideas, actually,
mm-hmm.
and it is just a matter of getting it done, and the more support you have from the public, the better chance you have of getting it done quicker. And there's just a few in the leadership that are really, they want to push an idea called catch shares that allocates the resource to its private ownership of a public resource by a few big corporations. And it puts the small independent fishermen out of business.
Well, I mean, the catch shares has been brought up here in Maryland when it comes to the crab fishery. And it is very interesting the way that whole process has worked and is starting to work. And the way our permit system works here, you will have a divided fishery in Maryland if catch shares ever goes into effect. Watermen are fiercely independent. And that whole system can create problems in a piece of water as small, relatively speaking, as the Chesapeake Bay. Do you agree or not?
Yeah, I agree. All the way around, it can create problems. And in our fishery, one of the problems it would create is that if you didn't have shares for certain kinds of fish, you'd have to discard all those that you caught. And so you'd end up with basically the same problem we have now.
Mm-hmm.
You could catch a few kinds of fish, the rest of them you're not allowed to keep.
Yep.
And so just by, if there's only 200 of us that on the whole southeast coast that can fish, really as long as you manage those quotas with those possession limits, that's the best way to go about it, the fairest for everyone. And if you start these seasons at the right times of year when these fish bite the best, you'll have the high limits. Then it's like in the middle of winter, you don't need to have a real high limit anyway. And even if you had a short closure for February, March, there's been some suggestion of that. That's where we just need to have these discussions and come up with a plan that everyone can live with and has as few negative impacts as possible on the resource itself, the consumer, and the fisherman.
Okay, very good. All right, what message would you like our listeners to take away, Chris?
Well, if you don't mind, I'd love for them to go to my website and read the public comments that I sent to you.
Sure.
Or go to your website and read it if you have it posted there.
I do not have it posted, but I will make that available to anyone who is interested, anyone who emails me, ellis@ellisoutdoors.com, like you have. I'll make that available. Your website again?
freefish7.com, and it's the fishery plan page that has those comments. And there's a email address for the South Atlantic Fishery Management Council at the top. If you agree with those solutions, I ask people to just send them a statement of support. The more people that support it, the better chance we can get it done soon.
Very good. Thanks, Chris. Appreciate you joining us.
Thank you.
Come back anytime. Let us know.
Yes, sir. You have a great day.
All right, buddy. You too. Thank you. Hey, Clyde Sports Shop, 2307 Hammonds Ferry Road in Lansdowne is your headquarters for recreational fishing and crabbing here in Maryland. If you would like to go fishing this weekend, we invite you to stop by Clyde's and check out their supply of live bait. They've got a great selection, and they've got good advice, including a free fishing hotline at 247-FISH. 410-247-3474 is the fishing hotline. But muzzleloader season's right around the corner. They've got the great Thompson Center muzzleloaders, the Triumph, the Omega, and others, the Encore, and others that you can check out at Clyde Sports Shop. Bow season is full swing with Coda bow, crossbows, the Parker vertical bows, the compounds, and the Parker crossbows as well. They've got the new G5. A bow too, with it's all set up and ready to hunt with all the accessories. That's by Diamond Bows, and you can check that one out too. Go to the website if you like. It's ClydesSports.com, ClydesSports.com, two S's in the middle, at .com, and you can see everything that Clyde's offers, their location, and everything else. They've got great gunsmith. They've got scope mounting and bore sighting. I get a lot of guns done there as far as scopes. Put on bore sighted, and that basically gets you on paper, so you can head down to the range and fine tune your firearm right from Clyde Sports Shop. They got all the licenses and everything else too. So, Clyde Sports Shop for hunting and fishing since 1957, 2307 Hammonds Ferry Road in Lansdowne, just off Beltway Exit 9. Give them a call, 410-242-6108. That's 410-242-6108.
This is the Wall Street Journal Report. I'm Joan Jones. Big city buses are attempting to be more like trains. To attract more commuters, cities across the country are sending sleeker, more spacious, and train-like buses onto certain commuter routes. They're packing these buses with amenities that are similar to the ones found on commuter rail and light rail trains. State-of-the-art buses allow riders to pay at the bus stop. They're outfitted with three or four doors for quicker loading and unloading. Rapid transit buses in Los Angeles include bike racks on the front. Buses in Las Vegas include inside racks so riders can bring their bikes on board. Stops on rapid transit bus systems are spaced farther apart than those on regular local service bus routes. That can cut commute times in half. There are even traffic signal priority transmitters to hold a green light long enough for the bus to get through an intersection. The transmitters can also change a red light to green more quickly as a bus approaches. I'm Joan Jones with the Wall Street Journal.
Presenting all 50 reasons to switch your business to the new Sage 50 accounting software. Ready?
Ready.
Go.
1. Sage 50 is quick to install and easy to use. 2. Turns information into insights. 3. Improves efficiency. 4. Easily tracks and forecasts cash flow. 5. Supports online banking. 6. Creates and manages budgets.
Time's up.
What?
6. Seriously? For all 50 reasons and a free trial of Sage 50 accounting, visit sagetoday.com/50.
Wait, I can do it.
Oh, that's sweet. sagetoday.com/50.
We're not sure what some banks mean when they say,
"How can I help you?"
Because whenever you ask for their help, it's always,
"That's not in our policy, sir."
And then they need to
transfer you to a supervisor
who is
currently assisting other customers.
And after all that, they say,
"Your business is extremely important to us."
At Ally Bank, we give you live, knowledgeable customer service any time of day or night. Products designed to help you, and no ridiculous fees. That's how Ally helps. Ally Bank. Your money needs an ally. Member FDIC.
Big Buck Scent's Cold Scent has a fast-growing reputation for attracting big Maryland bucks. Several friends of mine have used Cold Scent with great results. Big Bucks, Maryland's Eastern Shore's home to Big Buck Scent's. Big Buck Cold Scent is different than those mass-produced bottles you see on every shelf. First, it's one deer to one bottle. That's a 4-ounce bottle, too. Plenty for the rut. Now, the deer urine is collected and immediately refrigerated. It's kept cold, and the vital elements will not break down and become less attractive. Trust me, there's a science behind all this. Big Buck Scent arrives at your local dealer cold in its own refrigerator. You keep it cold till you use it, and you will see the results. Try Cold Scent Vanilla Bean, Doe in Heat, Dominant Buck, or Doe Pea in the 4-ounce bottle. For more information, visit the website BigBuckScents.com or visit your local dealer. Ask for and use Cold Scent by Big Buck Scents. W&W Tire and Auto Service in Finksburg has taken care of my trucks for over 25 years. Anything from a simple oil change to extensive engine work, brakes, tune-ups, everything, their motto is, we do it. Bridgestone and Firestone tires for pickups, SUVs, and commercial vehicles. Large trucks, motorhomes, even diesel engines are no problem. W&W Tire and Auto Service on Route 140, 3233 Baltimore Boulevard in Finksburg. Look for the big American flag. Call for an appointment, 410-833-8410. W&W Tire and Auto.
Talk Radio 680 WCBM.
Man, I like that song, but the introduction puts me to sleep. So we don't want anybody to go to sleep out there. So, hey, wake up and give us a call. Get in the muzzleloader contest, 410-WCBM-680, 410-922-6680 is our phone number. 1-800-WCBM-680, 1-800-922-6680. Want to hear your hunting and fishing story. Want to talk to you this morning. And if you'd like to win a CVA Wolf muzzleloader, we'd be glad to give you one. All you got to do is call in. 410-922-6680. Give us your name and phone number. The end of the month, everybody's name and number goes into a hat. We pull a winning ticket. Somebody wins a muzzleloader, and there's some other great prizes from our sponsors coming up. We'll tell you more about that later. So that's where we are. It's time for you to call. What would you? What do you think about the commercial fishery guy that talked to us earlier, Chris, from North Carolina? He makes some sense, and he's making some. He's one man is making a difference. So that's always nice to hear those stories that you keep up the good fight. So there we are. 410-922-6680 is our phone number. Give us a call right now. Is the time. There's a new initiative coming out from the Maryland Legislative Sportsman's Foundation. And the way it works is there's some money in tourism. There was a law put into effect in 2008, the Tourism Promotion Act of 2008. And a request is made by the Maryland Legislative Sportsman's Foundation to meet with the governor to discuss a national marketing campaign for Maryland. You and I have talked many, many times about our vast natural resources here, the opportunities we have for hunters and fishermen. We've got the Atlantic Ocean. We've got the Chesapeake Bay. We've got the world-class trout fishing streams. We've got great bass fishing on the Potomac and the Susquehanna. We've got great fishing opportunities in western Maryland as well. We've got hunting here. We've got white-tailed deer. We've got sika deer. We've got bears. We've got an abundant crop of wild turkeys. We've got waterfowl migrations that are second to none. We've got Canada geese and all the duck species, sea ducks, diver ducks, puddle ducks, you name it. We've got them all, and we've got a lot of opportunities for people to come here and enjoy the hunting and fishing that we have here in Maryland. 23,000 non-resident hunting licenses were sold in Maryland last year. So that's just one little tiny speck of it. So the initiative is to use some of the money that's come in, an overabundance according to this law and formula, to use it to promote fishing and hunting nationwide here in Maryland, perhaps staving off a license increase. Probably going to be a bill submitted this coming General Assembly for another license increase, a moderate one, and I think you folks should be prepared for that. But let's see what happens. What do you think about a nationwide marketing initiative for sportsmen to market fishing and hunting? It's not being done specifically. Tourism, of course, is out there. But what would your idea be on that? Let's talk to Kenny in Baltimore City. Good morning, Kenny. How you doing? Kenny, are you there? Where's Kenny? Kenny? Well, I guess he's not there right now. Let's talk to David in Laurel. Good morning, David. How are you?
Good morning. How are you doing this morning?
Good. You?
I'm doing great.
What's up?
I called you about a month ago or so.
Uh-huh.
To tell you that you made me a hero for my godson.
Yeah, I remember that.
Yeah, well, now he wants to take up hunting.
Oh, good for him.
Well, I don't know what I need to get this process started because I haven't been hunting in about 40 years.
I got you. Well, David, first thing you need is a hunter safety education course.
Okay.
And are you computer savvy?
Yes.
Okay. Go to the Department of Natural Resources website, and that's dnr.state.md.us or dnr.maryland.gov, one of the two. Just Google Maryland DNR, and it'll take you right to the site. Go to Hunter Education, and you will see a list of resources there in your county and around the area. You live in Laurel. You're not far from a couple places down that way, including why can't I say it? In Odenton, Meyer Station, which is not far from you, and you could register or at the Patuxent Wildlife Research Center, the hunting program there. There's a number of places down that way that provide hunter safety education courses. Get involved with your godson. Go with him. Take the course yourself. And that's the first step. Then he gets his first license for free here in Maryland.
Okay.
And then all he needs is somebody to take him and outfit him and, you know, help him out.
Right. So what would be a good weapon for him? And
how old is he?
He's 14.
14, okay. Well, it all depends on where you're going to hunt. I mean, my grandson is, he'll be 13 here next month, and he's shooting just a standard muzzleloader. He's shooting a rifle that has been altered. The stock has been altered. That was actually Kathy's, my wife's gun, and he shot his first buck with that. And then the for a shotgun hunt, he's got a youth model Mossberg pump for those counties that have a shotgun. Now, the shotgun that he has for waterfowl and upland birds is also an 870 pump, and he adapted pretty quick to that. It's a youth model, and we got it actually at Clyde Sports Shop, and it's adaptable, and it has some inserts in the stock that will grow with him. Now, if he's a big guy, he may be able to just handle a rifle. But for the most part, I'd start him out with a 20-gauge shotgun, maybe a youth model combo that has a rifle barrel and a deer barrel and a waterfowl barrel or a bird barrel. And then, you know, it's got to be pretty much up to you and him to determine what he can shoot and what he can't shoot.
Right. And then I guess obviously, everybody requires camis and
well, is he going to be primarily a bow hunter or a shotgunner? I mean, firearms hunter.
He's probably going to want to take up a shotgun.
Take up a shotgun. Okay. Yeah. Well, you know, as far as camouflage is concerned, it's far different than it was 40 years ago. All the technical clothing right now that's out there is, I mean, I like Under Armour. I like some of the other stuff that's out there, Rocky and some other stuff. But, right, everything's layers, base layer, mid-weight, and then, you know, your heavyweight gear over top. And the technical stuff is really good. Set up for hunters, it keeps you nice and warm and nice and dry. And you can see that, you know, once you get to that point, you know, call me back and maybe we'll have some suggestions or drop me an email and I'll see what we can do for you. But I would scan the hunting catalogs with him, sit down, make that a project, get online, go to some of the big boxes or get some of the catalogs and take a look and see what you got. And then, you know, as always, we tell you to support our sponsors, our local guys and see what they can do to help you out.
Okay. Well, Patuxent's not far from me.
Right.
That would be really good.
Yeah, I think they do have. I think they do. That's where I took my international bow hunting education course there. But I'm pretty sure they do provide a hunter safety education course. And then there's a couple shooting. You know, there's a couple gun clubs and stuff that put those courses on as well. So
one question, which probably sounds completely novice, what kind of ballpark of number am I looking at to start this process? Am I looking at $1,000, a couple thousand bucks?
As far as getting your grandson completely outfitted?
Yep.
Okay. Ballpark for a combo shotgun, $400. Clothing and boots, another $250. Hunter education program, usually under $10 or $20. I mean, that's pretty inexpensive other than the gas. And it's the more of a commitment of time. You know, it's a couple evenings and then a Saturday shooting course and orientation, blood trailing, and whatever else they do at this point. And then, you know, time and effort as far as getting him to the property to hunt and finding a place to hunt. You know, and that's all comes from networking.
Yeah, well, let's see. I'm totally outside of any kind of network, and the
right.
other thing is, I'd really, you know, have to be assured of safety.
Oh, absolutely. And it's not going to happen this year for you.
Oh, well.
It's not going to happen this year for you unless you get a license and you take him in the stand with you and you teach him. That's how that's going to happen. Because a hunter safety education course, there's probably a few available, but at this time of year, they're crowded. The first step is to go online and see where they are closest to you. I mean, it, you know, the time to do this is summertime. Spring and summer, get that safety course under your belt.
Yeah, well, I told you in the summer was the first time you ever told me you wanted to go fishing.
That's okay. Hey, look, it's a process. It's a long process.
Yeah.
So, okay?
Okay, thanks a lot.
All right, Dave, thanks. Mm-hmm, bye-bye. There we go. Paul in Centerville saying hi. Good morning, Paul. Thanks for waiting. How you doing?
All right, how are you today?
Good, man. What's up?
Just wanted to kind of give a shout-out. I really enjoy your show. I don't get to catch it all the time, but...
Well, I wish you would.
I do enjoy it very much. I do want to make a comment here that Queen Anne's County, the state of Maryland, and the waterfowlers lost a great person this week. Mr. Bill Price from up at Church Hill, one of the premier goose guides of our time, passed away this week. And he gave me my first chance at goose hunting, as well as gave both of my sons their first chance at goose hunting. And he's going to be greatly missed in our county.
Mm-hmm. Bill Price, I recognize the name, and I do know he was a pioneer in goose hunting here in Maryland. No question about that.
Yep.
Paul, did you know him well? Did you know the family well?
Yes, I did.
Do you have email, Paul?
Yes, I do.
Send me an email, and I'll tell you why I ask you to do that. We publish the Maryland Hunting Quarterly. And along the line, we like to recognize people in the outdoors that have passed on. He might be one that we could talk about, hopefully in the next issue, if you can get me some information. Ellis@ellisoutdoors.com. But time is of the essence. If you get in touch with me, I'll get right back to you on that. And you could maybe you could do a little write-up or put me in a direction of somebody who could and get some pictures and that type of thing.
All right, sir.
Does that work for you?
Yes, sir.
Please, Ellis, this weekend, if you could, Ellis@ellisoutdoors.com.
Okay.
Thanks, Paul.
Uh-huh.
All righty. Bye-bye. There we go. Joe in Baltimore, thanks for holding on.
Yes, how are you doing?
Good, buddy. How are you?
Pretty good. Listen, I wanted to thank you for your show, and I also wanted to talk a little bit. I heard that commercial fisherman from North Carolina.
Yes, sir.
And he mentioned how the red drum are eating the crabs, the small crabs.
You noticed how I let that one slide.
How? Why did you do that?
Because time was slipping away.
Yeah. Well, the thing I found, I was down to the Outer Banks. I don't get fish very often down there. I love fishing in Maryland. I love fishing any place. But the thing was, is I was also kind of surprised. The red drum, you know, they got it seems the biologists are always shooting for these really tight little slots. We ended up catching about 6 red drum, which wasn't really what we were going for, but just happened to get lucky. And these lovely 32, 36-inch red drum were too large.
Yeah.
And I'm like, you know, you've got to catch them. It's got to be bigger than this.
Yep.
Got to be smaller than that. Got to be rounder than this or squarer than that.
I'm with you, buddy. I'm with you. Look, my buddy Dwayne out at WNW Tire and Auto Service is a surf fisherman, loves North Carolina, has a protest vanity plate on his vehicle, which I love, and I'm not going to repeat it here, but it's pretty clever. And he showed me a picture the other day of a 46-inch red drum that he caught on the Outer Banks.
Yeah.
You know, and I agree with you, but they are starting to make a comeback. Of course, you understand what happened to the red drum population, don't you?
No, I'm not completely.
All right, about 20 years ago or so, The red drum became highly prized as a commercial fish to the point where the numbers were decimated. Demand was so high for this fish as a food fish where blackened redfish became popular in Louisiana and Texas and that type of thing. The demise of the red drum actually prompted the rise of the Coastal Conservation Association, and I believe it's still in their logo. That was what started that whole deal, was the demise of the red drum. So the red drum has been just as much of a political football on the Gulf Coast as the striped bass here is in Chesapeake Bay and the East Coast. And
I didn't know that.
Yeah, and that's why that all occurred. And it's taken this long for those populations to start to rebound. That's why we have the limited. Size limits and so forth on striped bass here in Maryland. That's why they have the limited size limits on the entire coastal fishery for red drum. So that's where we are on that situation. And I'm sure there's been volumes written about both of those species, but it's a management thing. The biologists take a look at the numbers. They make their suggestions. And as far as the slot limits are concerned, what they're looking at are year classes that are larger and smaller as far as the hatch is concerned. You know, we have our Young of the Year index here in Maryland.
Uh-huh.
By the way, I wonder where that is. I haven't seen it. Haven't seen the announcement on the Young of the Year Young of the Year count this year for striped bass. But some year classes are larger than others. Some fish, you know, like let's say 2005 was a giant year for striped bass. We know those fish are going to be coming online, you know, as far as our 18-inch limit and then our 28-inch limit. We know they're going to be coming online, you know, in 2013, let's say.
Right.
So we know that's going to be a giant fishery. And we have to depend on the biologists who have the knowledge to make those management decisions as far as size limits and bag limits to protect the sustainability of the fishery.
Well, I don't know.
And I understand your dilemma. You look at a 3-foot-long red drum and go, my goodness, would I like to keep this fish.
Especially when we've caught like 6 or 8 of them.
Yeah.
You know, and we'd like to keep maybe 2 or 3 of the 6. You know, we're not necessarily greedy.
Right.
But the other thing, too, is it's like with the flounder, Virginia at one point was up to 19 and a half inches for sports fishermen.
Yeah.
But commercial was 14 inches.
Oh yeah, we understand that, and that's the balancing act. That's the balancing act that has to occur between recreational and commercial.
I think it's partly getting rid of the recreational and getting rid of
They better not get rid of us here in Maryland, because the Maryland recreational fishermen that buy their licenses are supporting the industry to the tune of millions of dollars every year.
You know it, and I know it, but it doesn't seem to really strike home. And I know that the charter boat captains and stuff like that, the one thing they say is, it's really hard to vote against your neighbor who's a commercial fisherman, you know, and try and have things get a little tighter for him.
You know?
But on the other hand, who's doing more? Who's keeping more? How many flounders do you let go that don't make it down to the bottom, you know, and are swimming away, versus if they're hauled up in a net? I would assume that there's a fair number of them that die.
Sure.
You know, which may or may not be the reason why they let them keep them, but I don't know the commercial side.
It is a very difficult balance for fisheries managers. You know, and here's the other cog that you got to throw into the other monkey wrench you got to throw in the gears. You've got the federal regulations in international waters, and you've got that whole bureaucracy of management in Washington D.C. that thinks they know it better than anybody.
Well, I met a charter boat captain. He had trolled all up the coast from Wachaprieg up to Maryland, up the coast. And then as he was heading back to his port, he didn't think about it, and he took a straight line shot.
Right.
And now passed into international waters.
Oh, man.
Federal waters, out past the 3-mile limit.
Right.
The Coast Guard came along with a new local officer.
Right.
Who made him take all of the stripers that he had caught legally, and because he was now in federal waters, they
yep.
were illegal,
yep.
and made him, he begged the guy, he said, I begged them to just take them to a food pantry to a old age, whatever.
Dump them.
But made them dump them.
Yep, I know. Yep, okay. We just had that comment. Yes, sir.
Yeah, all right.
All right, buddy. Thanks. See ya. Bye-bye. There he goes. All right. We got Bob in Betterton. We'll take that call. Terry in Baltimore. We'll take a break between those two. Bob, good morning. How you doing, Bob?
I'm doing well, thank you, sir. How are you?
I'm good. What's up?
I was just wondering if you thought it would be absolutely asinine to take a handgun to a duck hunting. It's the Judge by Taurus, which shoots a .410 as well as a .45.
Is
that illegal?
Yeah, I think it is, Bob. I think it is. I'd have to check, but I think that's one of the stupidest ideas I've ever heard.
I know. That's why I was hesitant to call, because I thought you would think it was stupid.
But are you the one that's going to take that handgun shooting?
Yes.
Okay. See, I don't have the rule book in front of me. When were you going to do this?
Well, when
goose season comes in, huh? Duck season comes in. I mean, not that it wouldn't kill a decoy duck. I don't think you'd kill a goose with it. I think a goose would laugh at you. I mean, you can strike a goose. You can strike a goose with a load of number twos, depending on where he is, and he'll fly off. And, you know, he may die later, but it's pretty difficult to penetrate those big breast feathers of a goose unless you hit him in the head. And, and you can hit him in the rear end, because they'll absorb everything. And
I thought you might think it would be the height of conceit to do this.
No, I just think it's folly.
Yeah.
I mean, I don't think you got enough juice there. If 410, I don't know a lot of guys that waterfowl hunt with a 410 anyway. I mean, I know guys that do upland with 410s and 28 gauges, and that's almost like a challenge if they, you know, they blow a grouse or quail or something away with a small caliber like that, or a small gauge like that. But waterfowl, because of the density of the I think it's unsportsmanlike, to be honest with you.
Really?
I do. Yes.
You
I don't think I don't
them instead of killing them.
I think you stand farther a far greater risk of wounding an animal than killing it with something as underpowered as a .410, and especially in a handgun.
Well, that's a very good point. Okay, maybe I'll reconsider it.
I appreciate that.
Okay, well, I appreciate the advice.
Look, you could kill a bufflehead sitting on the water 10 yards from you with a .410, you know, a load of steel shot. Remember, you got to use steel shot.
Right.
Okay, so find a load of a .410 steel shot.
Uh-huh. They have magnums.
Find .410 magnums, a steel shot?
Uh-huh.
They have them?
I think so, yeah.
All right, I'll have to look at that one. But you know, consider the animal.
Yeah. Well, I do, because I love animals. I'm the kind of guy, if we have a heavy rain and there are dozens and dozens of fishy worms out on the road, you know, they come up so they won't drown.
Yeah.
I'm out there sitting my butt on the damn road picking up fishy worms to put them back on dry land where they can get back into dry soil.
Yeah, I understand that.
Before, what's that guy doing out there? I said, I'm just picking up fishy worms to save them from being run over by car tires. That's all. It just makes me feel well.
Good for you.
I
appreciate your conservation ethic on that. But I don't think it's a good idea as far as ducks are concerned. Especially, listen, here's the deal. These birds are coming in here. They're fully in full plumage. That insulates them from the cold. Imagine sitting out there on the Chesapeake Bay. All right?
Yeah.
They come along. They've got those heavy feathers. And then you smack them with a load of whatever, a .410 shot. And they fly away. And you haven't killed one. And it's, you know, a seagull is going to eat that nice redhead duck that you shot.
Yeah, well, that's an aspect I hadn't thought, and I appreciate the advice.
No problem, buddy. You got it. Take care. Thanks.
Thanks.
Yes, sir. Hey, Terry, how you doing? Terry.
Hello.
Hello. Hello. Hello. Yeah.
Good morning.
How are you?
Pretty good. Yourself?
Good. What's up?
Not too much. Just thought I'd call in into the contest. You got a great show on. Wish you were on more often.
I am on every Saturday from 5 to 7, 52 weeks a year.
I know. Other days other than Saturday.
I wish I could. 104 hours a year.
Nothing wrong with that. Okay. Great show, listening to all the time.
For 24 years. Thanks, buddy. Appreciate it.
Okay, thank you.
You're in. Okay, bye-bye. What he was talking about is a muzzleloader contest. We're giving away a muzzleloader at the end of the month. All you got to do is call, leave your phone number, and go on the air. At the end of the month, we'll put your name in a hat. Everybody gets a chance at a nice CVA muzzleloader, a nice Wolf from CVA, which is break action 50 caliber muzzleloader. Really nice gun. Folks at CVA have been good to us here in the Outdoors and Radio Show. Now it's time for me to tell you about Clyde Sports Shop, 2307 Hammonds Ferry Road in Lansdowne, just off Beltway exit number 9. Muzzleloader season right around the corner. They are specialized in Thompson Center muzzleloaders. They have all the accessories, all the bullets, all the powder, even black powder at Clyde Sports Shop. For you bow hunters, if you're looking for a good crossbow, I like to recommend the Coda Bow. They also carry Parker crossbows and vertical bows, or, you know, compound bows. And they have the G5, which is all set up and ready to go. It has all the accessories if you want to take a look at that. Clyde Sports Shop is your headquarters for fishing as well. Don't forget they got gunsmithing services, all the licenses. Gunsmithing as far as, you know, repairs and fixing and cleaning and that type of thing. But they do scope mounting and bore sighting. If you want to get your firearm ready for the upcoming season, get a new scope put on, have them bore sight it for you and take it out to the range and zero it in. Clyde Sports Shop, 2307 Hammonds Ferry Road in Lansdowne, just off Beltway Exit 9. Give them a call, 410-242-6108. That's 242-6108. Call the fishing hotline at 247-FISH, 247-3474. Visit the website clydesports.com. Clyde Sports Shop, proud to have them back as a sponsor of the Outdoors and Radio Show. Stop in and see them. 57 years of serving sportsmen around Maryland. Hey, Alan Ellis here for Bay Linex Spray-On Bedliners of Glen Burnie. Bay Linex of Glen Burnie is the only authorized Linex dealer in Glen Burnie and is proud to provide outstanding customer service, just like their number one rated Linex Spray-On Bedliners for your pickup truck with a nationwide lifetime warranty. Linex Bedliners completely seal out rust. It has a durable non-slip surface. Reduces noise and vibration. Linex bedliners resist most chemicals, fuels, and acids, protects against impact, and they clean up like new at your local car wash. The new Linex Extra can provide a color match to the color of your truck. They use the paint code from your engine. They match the bedliner to your pickup truck with the extra protection of DuPont Kevlar. Bay Linex of Glen Burnie, located at 400 Arundel Corporation Road. That's just off Beltway Exit 3A or Ritchie Highway North. You can visit them online at baylinex.com. Bobby Hawkins is the man to call. Here's that number, 410-789-0199. 410-789-0199. Find out how you can get a $30 Bass Pro Shop gift card when you mention Ellis Outdoors or the Outdoorsman Radio Show. Bay Linex of Glen Burnie. Do what I did and protect your investment with a Linex Spray-On Bedliner. It's the Doe Harvest Challenge. Deer hunters, by legally harvesting a doe and donating the meat, you not only feed hungry people in Maryland and please local farmers by reducing crop damage, now you could win valuable prize packages this season. Doe Harvest Challenge offers $5,500 in prizes with 18 chances to win. This contest is limited to 13 counties. If you hunt in Carroll, Frederick, Anne Arundel, Calvert, Charles, St. Mary's, or Prince George's counties, or in Queen Anne's, Kent, Caroline, Talbot, Dorchester, Wicomico counties on the shore, and you harvest a doe, all you have to do is donate your deer through a participating FHFH deer processor. Every 3 weeks, an up to $300 winner will be drawn in each of the three regions, plus a $500 grand prize package to one lucky hunter in each region. Participating deer processors have entry cards to fill out in their shops. You can enter every doe you donate within the Region B bag limits all season long. The 2012 Doe Harvest Challenge is sponsored by the Maryland Farm Bureau, Maryland Grain Producers Utilization Board, the Maryland Soybean Board, and Farmers and Hunters Feeding the Hungry. For more information, contact the Maryland Farm Bureau, 410-922-3426. The Buck Bomb is the hottest deer scent technology on the market. The Buck Bomb is pure deer urine manufactured in an aerosol spray. Now, the Buck Bomb, distributed in this molecular form, gives whitetails the opportunity to follow the scent trail to your stand site. The delivery rate and the large broadcast area cannot be duplicated with liquid, solid, or gel scents. Buck Bomb Doe Pea and Vanilla Curiosity work well any time to disguise your odor. Pick up a can of Young Buck or Acorn Rage for the bow season. For early muzzle loader, the dominant buck scent will challenge other bucks to seek you out. And now the heart of the rut through firearm season, try Doe and Estrus or Bone Collector Buck Bomb. Visit your local outdoor retailer or you can order online at buckbomb.com. Learn more about the Buck Bomb or you can call 866-850-6653. And fishermen, you can try the new Fish Bomb Menhaden Quick Slick from the makers of Buck Bomb. The Buck Bomb blows away traditional scent products. Hunt smart, increase your odds with the Buck Bomb.
Talk Radio 680 WCBM.
Running out of time here. Let's say hi to Kenny. Good morning, Kenny.
Good morning.
How are you?
I'm doing well. And yourself?
Good, thank you.
Good, good. Hey, listen, the reason why I'm calling, I wanted to sign up for the muzzleloader.
You're in.
Awesome.
Cool. That's all it takes to qualify, buddy. We appreciate it.
Well, thank you for accepting my call.
You got it, Kenny. Good luck to you.
Thanks.
Bye-bye.
Thank you.
There he goes. Let's talk to Walt in Catonsville. Good morning, Walt. How you doing?
Good morning, Alan.
Very limited time. What's on your mind?
I have a question. Also, I called a few times and I talked to you about Mr. Frost.
Yep.
And
got a nice letter from him.
He sent me a beautiful letter saying that he was sitting. He spoke to his doctor. His doctor denied going fishing with me.
Yep, I know it.
And he sent me a beautiful letter talking about he's sitting in his fighting chair at home.
Yeah, that's nice, isn't it?
It is.
All right, Walt. Hey,
also,
thanks for the
question. Was with the rain we had.
Yes.
Okay, I think you have an idea of familiar with where I fish.
Yeah.
And it seemed to run all the big fish out of there again.
Well, probably the increase or the decrease in salinity. So,
right. So yep. I would move up the bay then.
Correct.
I guess.
Yes, sir.
That's
Walt.
Got
to go, buddy. Thanks.
Okay,
I appreciate
thank
it.
Thank you very much, Alan.
Bye-bye. Yep, Jack Frost. Good guy. Very good. Hey, got to tell you about Tochterman's. Yep. Seems like we're always doing Tochterman's at the last minute. But that's okay, because that's the last thing in your mind to talk about Tochterman's. Downtown Baltimore, 1925 Eastern Avenue in Fells Point, 2.5 blocks east of Broadway. Just remember, all fishing all the time. If you need it for fishing, Tochterman's got it. Anything for the bay, for bass fishing, for fly rod fishing, for offshore, for surf fishing, they've got it. 1,000 fishing rods on display, 600 fishing reels, Costa Del Mar sunglasses, frog togs for wet weather, waders and hip boots, a complete fly tying section, a complete fly tying room with great, great fly fishing tackle. And experts to back everything up. You want to talk fly fishing, talk to Joe. You want to talk about bass fishing, talk to Gene. Offshore, talk to McCabe. You want to talk to about bloodworms, well, you talk to Miss D about that.